This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
I owe you nothing!
It's just money.
This is madness! Everybody just yells and screams at each other. Nobody's civil anymore!
That's not the kind of humor we do on this show.
Put that coffee down.
I drink your milkshake.
Now you're looking for the secret.
There can be only one.
Everything becomes chaos.
Can you dig it?
Brent Johnson, happy new year, my friend. Welcome back to another episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness. This is officially season one, episode one. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. Happy new year. Good to see you. You look a little different. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't ready for that shirt.
Well, people who don't know me, I'm usually very much a consistent black V-neck individual. But I decided, you know, it could be one of those rough year, so I decided to be in the spirit and wear red for a red year, and I'm also rocking a special message.
Nice.
This is actually a shirt I made.
I need one of those.
Yeah, we'll get you
an enjoy. One of those.
We'll get you an enjoy cash flow T-shirt. I think it's also funny and ironic considering that you do on occasion enjoy a Coca-Cola, a Diet Coke
occasionally.
So there it is. See. See, we're on the same page. Look, man, we're in the first week. It doesn't really feel like we've really, really started, but there's some stuff happening this week, non-farm payroll. There's some chatter, but it hasn't been quiet, certainly not in the world of the dollar milkshake. Do you want to just see or share what you're seeing so far right out of the gate?
Well, you know, so far, the market's open. You know, it was kind of weird. The first day of the year, dollar opened up really big. Gold and silver opened up really big. Even though the dollar opened up big, I already got a couple notes saying this was the year the dollar would hyperinflate. And so I had to turn around and say, no, it's not. They didn't give me any time. You know, right out the gate, we already got the hyperinflationary predictions, which are not going to happen in the U.S. dollar, I'm sorry to say. It's so far it's been somewhat of an interesting week. You know, the big news today was the ADP. Payrolls came out strong, and then so the market sold off on that hot. And then yesterday the Fed minutes came out, and they were a little more hawkish than people were expecting. And so markets they're pretty much flat so far for the year. But I think it's going to be a big year. I don't think the first 3 days, relative quietness, are going to be indicative of the year as a whole.
What's your take on recession? I mean, it's such a subjective word, right? The idea first, it's two consecutive quarters of GDP, and then of course the government doesn't want to have any part of that when they get two consecutive quarters. Do you think we have a recession that they're willing to put their stamp on this year? And do you think generally the economy feels like it's in recession?
Well, I think that the Fed is definitely willing to cause a recession. Whether or not they want it to stay there very long, that's kind of a different topic. I kind of feel like sometime in the first half of the year, we're going to revisit the lows in equities, probably go below them, and potentially even cause some kind of a Fed pivot. But I think that the Fed continues on their path and continues to raise until that happens. Now, the one thing I don't like about that idea is there's a lot of people that share that opinion. That is not a unique opinion. That's not a contrarian opinion. It may not be consensus. I don't think people are necessarily consensus saying that, and maybe not everybody's position for that. But I'm certainly not going to be considered an outlier for saying that we're going to have a recession sometime, or at least a big risk off moment sometime in 2023. But as of right now, that is kind of my base case. I'm always looking for ways that could be wrong. And, I'll reposition accordingly if I need to. But as of right now, I think everybody should be very careful.
Well, you know, speaking of the idea of being contrarian or not, and on this somewhat topic of the Fed recession, etc., you did have a tweet that was kind of interesting. You know, you kind of made the joke that the black swan would be the Fed actually pulling this off. You want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, just, you know, again, maybe it's not consensus, but I just think it's a very popular opinion that we're going to have a recession this year. That most people didn't think that the Fed could do what they did last year without causing, you know, dramatic collapse of the economy. But you know, they were able to do it. And so I think this year, a lot of those people and maybe even some new people are saying, okay, that didn't happen last year, but now it's going to happen this year. And, you know, it just kind of goes back to typically when everybody's ready for one thing, it doesn't happen. And, you know, I'm not saying it can't happen, and there's nothing wrong with being the consensus. You know, the consensus is usually the consensus because it's working, right? So there's no point to be a contrarian just to be a contrarian. But my point is when everybody's expecting something, it typically doesn't happen. And I think most people, not everybody, but I think most people are expecting some kind of volatility this year. And so my kind of joking tweet was maybe the black swan that nobody can envision is low volatility and markets just continue to climb higher and everything's fine.
Yeah, we kind of touched on that last week in terms of the consensus or everybody, this so-called finger quote recession is the most forecasted or the most well foreseen recession in a very long time. Everybody sees that it's, or predicts that it's on the horizon. So in that environment, right, where you have everyone kind of leaning one way, sometimes the long painful draw out is what, you know, gets everybody caught off sides. They're expecting this dramatic unwind and it doesn't happen. So if we're going into a year such as that, where people are, you know, being cautionary makes sense, but what happens if that recession doesn't occur? Because you've also emphasized a lot here that Jay Powell specifically as a central bank chairman has been very, very clear about his objectives. So you have everyone kind of consensus about a recession. And so therefore, maybe that doesn't happen. Maybe we just have this painful grind out. Well, at the same time, you have a very, very outspoken or clearly directive Fed chairman. So we kind of know where they're headed. So the surprises tend to be what causes the chaos, right? So is it a factor of everyone being expecting the same thing and Jay Powell telling everybody where they're going that we don't enjoy the ride, but the ride isn't, you know, a roller coaster down to the ground?
Yeah, you know, I think that could happen. Again, that's not my base case. Again, my base case is that we're going to have a lot of volatility at some point in the first half of the year. And whether we go into a recession and stay there or whether it's another V-shaped issue like it was in 2020, I don't know. But that's my base case. But you know, if I'm playing devil's advocate with myself, I'm already saying, okay, inflation's already starting to come down. Once we get into kind of February, March, April timeframe, certainly into May, the year-over-year inflation numbers, the comps are going to be very favorable. So it's going to show that inflation's coming down dramatically just based on the comps, right? Right. And now imagine we get into April or May and, you know, markets are maybe off a little bit, but not dramatically. Now we have an inflation number that comes out based on year-over-year and it's dropped dramatically. And now everybody says, okay, the Fed has been successful. They don't have to keep hiking. And so now that's going to mean that an easing cycle is coming up. So let's get into risk assets and get rocking and rolling. Now, again, I'm not saying everybody's positioned for that. That's not my base case, but I'm always trying to figure out how can my base case be wrong? Because I feel like right now, a lot of people have my base case. You know, I think the thing that would probably drive people the most crazy is if we just went sideways for 6 months. That would frustrate the bulls and the bears. A lot of people, there's a lot of put options. You know, the put call ratio is high. You know, a lot of put, you know, the put decay or the decay of the option premium just whittled down over the next 3 or 4 months. That would cause a lot of pain just in and of itself.
So, yeah. So to help anyone out who I would assume most people listening to the show already kind of understand the point you're making about the inflation comps, but generally CPI and other inflation metrics are looked at from a year over year. So a rate of change, we've had such dramatic rate of change this year that even you know, still high inflation would look like a flat or potentially even negative. Right. Maybe that's, you know, that, that works in the Fed's favor in terms of the type of monetary policy that they pursue, the so-called, you know, 2% Goldilocks inflation. You know, when it comes to what's going on with central banks and their goal to put out the fire on inflation, and as I mentioned last week, they don't, doesn't seem to me that they're doing anything in a vacuum. And what's been so interesting from a central bank standpoint is, again, talking about Powell being very clear and forward about what their goal is. But then you have the Bank of Japan pulls this, you know, out of nowhere surprise, widening the band. And then since then, they've kind of had to be the good old BOJ that we all know and you know, basically yield curve control on an aggressive level, even though the band has been widened. So you want to talk about that. And it'd be interesting to kind of hear where you see those knock-on effects as the dollar milkshake guy playing throughout the, you know, the currency markets and just financial markets in general.
Yeah. So, you know, if people haven't been following, I'd recommend they go back and watch the last couple episodes, because the last couple episodes we talked about the Bank of Japan and the yen and the yield curve control. And what's interesting now is that now that we're into January, we get the data that's come out and shown that in order to keep yield, so they increased the band with which, you know, the JGB yield could trade within. But in order to keep it from just absolutely exploding higher, they had to spend, what was it, 16 trillion yen. So 16 trillion yen is about the equivalent of $120 billion. Now, $120 billion. So they spent that just in December to keep things under control, right? Now, the reason I think that number is interesting, $120 billion, is that's what the amount that the Fed was spending on a monthly basis at its peak of QE a couple of years ago, or a year and a half ago. So the U.S. economy is 15 trillion or 16 trillion. The Japanese economy is 5 trillion. So the US economy is 3 to 4 times as big as the Japanese economy. The Fed is not only printing for the United States, but they're printing for the whole world because of the euro dollar market. And now in December, you know, the Bank of Japan comes out and does $120 billion worth just for the Japanese market. You know, that's not flowing overseas. Because that's not, you know, nobody needs yen in Argentina. So they're just printing for Japan. And so, again, if you've on a relative basis, that is a lot more yen being printed than dollars being printed. And so, you know, the yen had kind of appreciated a bit last year. Now it's already starting to fall off these first couple of days of this year. I mean, I think that's going to continue. And I think it could contribute dramatically. And I think the yen is going much lower. I think it's going a lot lower. And I use the Bank of Japan as an example because they're kind of the one of the most extreme, but it's happening all over the world. Again, every time people say the Fed, it's not that they're wrong. They should be worrying about what the Fed's doing. But I just wish one time somebody would say the ECB, or the BOJ, because they're even worse offenders in my opinion. And I think, you know, all the people that think that last year was an anomaly with the dollar going higher, or I think they're going to be wrong. I think the dollar is going higher this year. So surprise, surprise, right?
So I'm giggling because I just kind of had an interesting idea, which I'll get to here in a second. So you've made it clear before that the central banks and their view of altruism are either going to sacrifice the bonds or the currency for the bonds. And it's clearly what path for a very long time now Japan has been on. They're sacrificing the currency to save the bond market. Is there any specific, I know you're kind of making a point here about, you know, supporting kind of your case for number one, the strength of the dollar. But number two, the fact that people are always attacking the dollar and the Fed without looking at this being a relative game in a currency market or in a world of fiat currencies, you got to look at it relatively. So what are some of the knock-on effects and maybe it's not just a question about financial markets, maybe it's geopolitics. Like, In that currency world concept, you know, aren't some of these other markets being like, okay, Japan, you know, enough's enough. Like, you can't keep doing this to your currency.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has huge geopolitical knock-on effects. I mean, the yen getting weaker, you know, it's a direct competitor, a regional competitor with the yuan. It kind of puts pressure on China to weaken the yuan. The problem is China has high inflation, too. They weaken the yuan, then their inflation goes higher. But the flip side is if they don't weaken the yuan, then they've got this real estate market that's putting a lot of deflationary pressure on the market that's telling them to deflate the yuan. So, and if the yuan gets depreciated for whatever reason, that sends a deflationary wave to the rest of the world. And, you know, and not only that, but it just puts them in a tough situation. And if not only that, it would cause social unrest at home, you know. And so I've said this several times. I don't think that it's being done on, I don't think that the Fed raising rates is purely for monetary policy. I think they are doing it for monetary policy, but I think that they have a very good understanding that the additional or ancillary, what's the right word, or not a knock-on effect is that it has geopolitical consequences. And if the U.S. can put, you know, a lot of the rest of the world in kind of a uncomfortable situation or kind of under economic pressure, it helps them maintain their position at the top of the mountain. And I think that's just what empires do. And if you want to call the U.S. an empire, I'm fine with that. And if you want to call them a bully, I'm fine with that too. But it's just important to understand how they act. And if I was in their situation and I was trying to win the game, that's what I would do.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a game of chicken, right? They want to flex that muscle up until the point where you know, it doesn't end up turning into groups of countries and regions conspiring against, which also is another topic that you love to play with, in that, you know, anytime somebody sells oil or sells gold or does a transaction or global trade in something besides dollars, yeah. You always like to highlight the point that they're missing a key aspect to that. And so please, I'll throw the mic back at you to kind of explain the point you're making there.
Well, I think it's just really like people, to me, there's a moral part. There's a moral outrage part of this whole dollar debate. I think there's a lot of people who just from a moral perspective, just can't accept that the U.S. is the bully or that they've been so fiscally profligate and they do not deserve for their currency to stay strong. And so therefore, it is not going to. And they just anytime they see anything that says this is going to weaken the dollar, they grab on it and say, see, there it is. See, there it is, without actually stopping and thinking through it, right? And so I think a lot of this, you know, I think a lot of the dollar bearishness is morally driven and headline driven. But I think if you actually sit there and do the analysis and figure out what's actually going to happen as opposed to what you would like to see happen, to me, it becomes much more clear. Now, this is not me saying that it can never happen, that the dollar can't lose value, that the U.S. can't lose its space on top of the mountain. Of course, all those things can happen. But I think if you're going to get through the next couple of years, you have to kind of become a mercenary. This is from a fiscal perspective, from a monetary perspective. You kind of have to be a mercenary. Put your feelings aside and just analyze everything from a purely, you know, objective point of view. And I think when you do that, you realize that despite all their problems and despite all their faults, the United States still has a number of advantages that the rest of the world just doesn't have. And no empire is going to just lay down and roll over and let somebody else take over without using all the resources they have to maintain their position. Let me just give you one quick example, and then we can move on to something else. But the Russia-Ukraine war has now been going on for almost a year, about 11 months, right? Now, that's Ukraine, a relatively small country. Now, it has the backing of sort of the backing of NATO and the U.S., fighting a big global one of the global powers in Russia. And 11 months later, it's still going on and there's no clear end in sight. But yet the United States, which is the global superpower and has all of these incredible advantages, is just going to fall over the next month and is not going to be able to put up a fight. And when China and Russia decide that the U.S.'s days are over, it's just going to happen just like that. So, I mean, think about it, right? It's just, it doesn't make sense. Even if it does come to a battle, the U.S. has so many resources that can extend this game 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years before this, you know, grand end game comes about. And so I think people need to kind of think about things like that and realize no matter no matter what inevitability will come, that doesn't mean inevitable and imminent are not the same thing.
And we did make a point about that before, that a lot of these things, again, milkshake theory, the dollar milkshake theory, it ends with only one. And without getting into the specificity of how that all plays out, all of it potentially plays out when you and I are long gone from this planet. And some people
can't.
And some people can't quite accept that, nor can they accept the fact that Ghana is probably buying oil with gold, because no one will accept their currency.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's interesting sometimes when you kind of pull back the layer a little bit and add fresh light to the broader subject, it almost feels like you're whistleblowing, you know, the US dollar's secret, you know, geopolitical warfare. And I'm just wondering at what point, you know, somebody kicks your door down, and then, you know, the feds come busting in and arrest you like they did with Andrew Tate. So you got to be careful about, you know, what kind of, no pizza boxes on your counter back there when we're filming.
I'm going to have to remove all this stuff behind me so that it doesn't give away any secrets, right? God, wasn't that something? Andrew Tate versus Greta Thunberg. Oh my God. Well, so, I mean, the first thing, I'm not a fan of either one of those, but I mean, that was a classic. I mean, that was just classic, right?
That's why we're on Twitter.
I mean, and I think anybody who's following me knows that I'm not a Greta Thunberg fan, but I thought she like just knocked him out. You know, here's the cool macho kickboxer, and she just delivered the ultimate blow, in my opinion. It was hilarious. And then his reaction where he tried to play it off just made it even worse.
Yeah, and but at the same time, I think it's funny how that event transpired, because one of the favorite things for me about the internet, social media, is if you can pull yourself out of the ring, like you don't have to be part of the fight all the time. It's really interesting to see how polarizing people are. And look, if you're in the Greta Thunberg camp, you like her personally, you like her mission, those represent your politics. That was the greatest, you know, dunk, you know, in your Absolutely. Entire life. If you're on the Andrew Tate side of things and whatever that energy or viewpoint is, and some of it's sovereign, some of it is a bit of this, like I'm shining light on conspiracy theories and whatever your take on it. It was just so funny how there was no room. And I think the reason I'm mentioning this, because it has a lot to do with what you're talking about when you're approaching investing, financial markets, you know, the global dollar as a reserve currency, is there was never a moment in that debate and all that drama for anyone to sit back and be like, what's really going on here? Is this situation correct? Was it, you know, really a one-sided type of dunk? And to me, neither one of those people matter in my life, but I do find those like heated, intense, viral moments very interesting, because it just shows people they never take a moment to really like digest what's going on.
Well, part of the reason I found it so funny was, to be honest, I really didn't know who Andrew Tate was. You know, I saw her tweet and I thought, oh my God, that's just the greatest comeback ever. But then it kept making rounds. So I was like, well, I got to go figure out who this guy is. And then I looked him up and then I realized I had seen some of his speeches or I'd seen some of his clips before. But you know, it maybe the fact that I wasn't super familiar with who he was made it easier for me to just kind of laugh at the whole thing and kind of, I don't know, be fairly objective. I don't know. Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't, but, anyway, I just found it was one of the best things I've seen over the last 10 days or 12 days, whatever it was.
Well, speaking of people not getting along, agreeing or being able to, you know, understand the other side's viewpoint, you want to talk a little bit about the craziness that's going on in government? There's a couple things happening in the US at the moment.
I mean, talk about madness. It's just so last week, or maybe it's a couple of weeks ago now, this guy got elected to Congress back in the November elections, and then it came out over the last couple of weeks, I think his name's George Santos, that he basically just made up, he's a Republican, basically just made up everything. It didn't make up one or two things, like literally made up everything.
You're telling me his LinkedIn isn't accurate?
Well, you know, it said that he worked at Goldman Sachs and he worked at Blackstone and he, you know, went to Harvard. I don't know. I'm making up what he said, but he basically just lied about everything. And it finally came out But he won't resign. And so, of course, and the Republicans aren't like up in arms telling him to resign either, because they barely got the House, right? And so the Democrats are all up in arms about it. And they're saying this would never happen under the Democrats. And my point was, listen, the guy should definitely resign. He's a total, you know, whatever, loser, whatever, liar. But it's not like this has ever happened, never happened with the Democrats. So a couple of people started coming at me. This would never happen under the Democrats. Meanwhile, I literally, on my desk right now, I have a video of Joe Biden in a bar talking trash to a guy, literally made up where he went to school, what his grades were, what awards he got, where he finished, literally made it all up. You know, he's the president of the United States. And then literally after that video came out, there's a video from like Sam Donaldson on the nightly news saying, yeah, all of this is wrong. And then Biden even had to go out and say that, yeah, I misremembered. Right. So again, I'm not saying this guy, this is George Santos, he should clearly resign, but this is not just a Republican thing. But now to throw a little more shade on the whole process, or the whole just the ridiculousness of it all, is, you know, the Republicans took control of Congress. And that was 2 months ago. Now, you know, they're starting the new year. They're ready to elect their Speaker of the House. And Kevin McCarthy, who's supposed to be the obvious winner of the vote to elect the Speaker of the House, but he can't get elected Speaker of the House. There's now been eight votes, and he can't get elected. And it's like I think he's got like the Colonel Sanders strategy, you know, just keep knocking on the door one more time. Sooner or later, they're going to elect me. But, you know, it's been 3 days and the Republicans are so unorganized, they can't even elect a Speaker of the House once they get Congress. So, you know, I'm pretty down the middle. I like to think I probably lean right, you know, politically, but I think both parties are just a complete clown show. And if this doesn't prove it to you, I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, it truly is madness. And I'm of the belief that most people are moderate, like they're more in the center.
Yeah.
And they are.
I agree.
Yeah, we're always, I think, stuck in this environment where we're poorly misrepresented. But and maybe this is going to come off the wrong way, but I don't know if I would immediately jump to saying that this guy needs to resign, because it kind of like highlights the lunacy in the whole process, right? Do we really think people elected this guy because they looked at his fake background and he went to Goldman Sachs, or did they elect him because of other politically driven reasons? He was a Republican on the ticket. So, I mean, they're all liars. They're all cheats. I think it's funnier and almost a bit more like appreciated when it's just blatant and bold like that. Like, I'm not saying it should be completely forgiven, but I just feel like they're all in that camp. It's like
the ball's on this guy, right? I mean, he literally made about everything.
Well, but look at Trump. I mean, I think that's kind of the thing when you got a guy that just blazes his own trail and goes so off the reservation with his approach. It shows that now this guy, it's not like this guy took a upfront brazen tactic. He just blatantly lied. But again, I think it just shows that like there's a lot of broken things in the process and how people feel about the process, that things like this can even happen. I mean, election fraud 100% exists, and it's not a Democrat or Republican point. It's the fact that why in the hell are we not using things like blockchain to verify votes, like this hand counted ballot crap? Like, you don't even do that when you're electing like a high school president. You know what I mean? Like, run a freaking Twitter poll and elect the president. You know what I mean? Like, cut me a break.
Yeah. It's all just crazy. I just thought it was hilarious that, anyway, it doesn't matter. It's all craziness.
It's all madness, and that's why we're here.
It's all madness.
Episode one, man. We're stoked to be starting what is definitely going to be a wild year. I feel like 2022. We are just digesting everything very, very quickly. Inflation, rate hikes, war, you name it. Now we kind of know what ingredients we're working with, and we can kind of have a sense of what the recipe is going to be. And it definitely, you know, seems like it's going to be a wild one. So this will be fun. Episode one in the books. Brent, any last thoughts before we wrap it up?
The only thing I'm going to say is I know a couple people like emailed us or responded to us on Twitter asking for book recommendations. I don't have a big one right now other than I'll give you my two favorite books of all time. And the first one is The Alchemist, and it's a book about following your dreams. And the second one is The Old Man and the Sea, and that's about if you follow your dreams, you're still going to have a hell of a struggle. So those are my two favorite. And it just so happens that the main character in both of those the books is named Santiago.
Yeah, you know, I can't let you leave on that. We're not that mic hasn't fully dropped yet, because this has been something even just for me I've been meaning to bring up. So we will leave it on a cliffhanger, but this is a topic I think we start with next week, because there's more to unpack there about both of those books and the fact that you decided to name your fund after the main character. So there's a reason for people to tune in next week. Besides the markets bit, we get to learn a little bit more about the madness of Santiago Capital. All right. Well, you can find us on Milkshakes Pod everywhere. That's the handle for Twitter, for YouTube, you name it. Milkshakespod.com will get you to the website. Thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next week.